Why do more media professionals read iwantmedia.com? iwantmedia.com features reports from industry leaders and media personalities. iwantmedia.com gives you quick access to news, stats, trade orgs, and industry publications, and it's updated daily. Forbes says iwantmedia.com contains everything media professionals need to stay ahead of the game. The Washington Post calls it the source for the serious media geek. Do you get it? If you don't, you should. To sign up for free daily email alerts, visit iwantmedia.com.
Welcome to The Advertising Show, America's only radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, product development, branding, new media, sales and customer relations. Stay with us for entertaining marketing discussion and our special guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe.
They said that right. It's The Advertising Show being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com. The Advertising Show with Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe is a copyrighted Big Radio Midgets production. Special guest today for you is Tom Cohn, focusing his practice. He's basically an attorney, Venable LLP at Venable.com. Focusing his practice on advising clients on the legal and practical aspects of compliance with FTC regulations and rules and industry self-regulation programs, as well as representing clients during investigations and enforcement actions. A wide variety of clients. We'll tell you more about Tom in just a moment, including a stint that he did as it relates to the telemarketing sales rule and the CAN-SPAM Act, and also something involved with the funeral industry, which we'll talk about here in just a moment as well. Jeremy Kent is with us today from the UK, our European correspondent, and is going to be talking about Wikia for European advertisers as it is introduced in that country as well. So a lot of good stuff here today for everybody tuning in to The Advertising Show with Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe. One thing that I had to share, Brad, by the way, how are you doing?
Well, just great. Great. Thank you.
Good. Okay. I found this in the Wall Street Journal, and this is has to do with the funeral industry, not necessarily a dying industry. Okay. We'll use that term frequently throughout this. Basically, this article, which is a Stephanie Simons article, it's basically to attract future customers. Cemeteries hold parties to die for. The mortuary chapel smelled of brownies in Denver, that said the tissues tucked discreetly at the end of each pew were being used not to dab tears but to wipe away chicken crumbs. And as the big band burst into stomping at the Savoy, two couples, one with a dog in tow, jumped up to boogie in the aisles to the music. Another rocking evening here at the Fairmount Cemetery. So, funeral homes, it's not just your normal advertising that they've been doing. It's a marketing move that has drawn some criticism. How can it draw some criticism? I think it's great. Graveyards across the nation opening their grounds to concerts and clowns, barbecues and dance performers, anything that goes. It might bring happy families through the wrought iron gates. The goal here is to nurture warm feelings about the cemetery in hopes that folks who come to cheer skydivers today will return in more somber tomorrows. And then we end our little spiel about that. So isn't that funny?
Well, if they're listening and they want to use this slogan, go ahead. We put the fun in your funerals, or funk, or whatever. I mean, just play off of FUN and funerals, and there you go. There's your tagline.
You know, from a radio station perspective, you had an account executive bring in a funeral spot. It's like, no, I'm sorry. I don't think so. There was the famous WKRP episode where they wrote the jingle about the funeral homes and such. But Tom Cohn was involved with the funeral rule. Played a key role in the development and implementation of the rule, the Funeral Rule Offenders Program. I've seen those cars on the street. An innovative self-regulatory alternative to traditional law enforcement. So maybe he'll be able to comment on, or maybe has attended, one of these parties at the funeral home. So with that said, what do you have there?
And by the way, if you're in the funeral business, you're losing market share, major market share, as all the boomers get older. You're going to have to replace that business. I don't know where you're going to do that. Yeah. Comcast, apparently, some 62% of all U.S. viewers say they use time-shifting technology such as DVRs, according to a poll conducted by Comcast. 6 in 10 people say they own a DVR. Quoting one viewer, "I just don't have the time to figure out what shows are on what time." Now, luckily, this person that they just quoted hopefully is not operating heavy machinery if he can't figure out, or she, whoever that is.
Well, I think the DVR is a great idea. I was I was home.
But you don't use it because you don't know how to go through the guide. I mean, come
no,
on.
No. What we'll do is, you know, especially with the satellite system that we have, you can back the show up. You can start it over. You can go ahead. And if you just want to fast forward through the commercials, you can do that too. But I was watching Comcast in Ohio, and I was like, okay, where's the pause button? Where's the fast-forward button?
Yeah, you get used to that.
What's wrong with this picture? So, yeah, I kind of like it. And for crying out loud, I'm in the advertising business. Go figure that.
Well, I mean, what about the days that your father would say, son, get up there and change the channel?
Yeah, there always was that remote control, wasn't there?
Yeah.
How funny.
So we were the remote controls.
Yeah, we were the remote controls, exactly.
Yeah.
You got something else there?
Well, I was going to mention, and I say this for a reason. By the way, before I get into it, and it's tied in with this, George Lois has written a highly controversial article for Playboy. I believe it's in the August issue, maybe September. I think it's August.
Yes.
Yeah, it's August issue. And he sent me a copy. I was emailing him the other day, and it's all over the internet. Just Google, you know, George Lois, Mad Men. It's about Mad Men.
Oh, it is about Mad Men. Okay, good.
Yeah, he's not very, as we know from having interviewed him, Ray.
Yeah.
George is not a big fan of Mad Men.
No.
But, yeah, and it's an interesting article. Either go buy the magazine or find it online or whatever, but a lot of people are weighing in on what George has to say, including Rance Crane at Advertising Age and others. But Playboy is posting photos of a semi-clad Jodie Fisher, not Foster, Fisher. That's the woman whose sexual harassment charges cost Mark Hurd his CEO job at Hewlett-Packard.
Oh.
In the free section of its website, they're posting semi-nude pictures. They also are smart enough to be running 13 shots of Fisher, totally in the buff. That's the premium pay channel. And while I'm speaking about this, Ray, I wanted to check that out. What is your password for your subscription?
I don't have one.
No, you don't?
Okay. I use yours, actually.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm sorry, too. As a matter of fact, I'll give it back to you.
I use a coupon.
Jeremy Kent is from the UK, and he tells us all about what's going on over there. Wikia for European advertisers and so much more here at the Advertising Show. Hey, Jeremy, what's cooking out there, huh?
Hello and welcome to the European News Desk. I'm Jeremy Kent. Coming up this week, Wikia targets European brands, Adidas keeps on scoring, and does a new bribery law mean an end to lunch? Wikia was launched in 2004 by Jimmy Wales, the founder of Wikipedia. It has over 150,000 online communities devoted to special interests such as cult TV shows, sports and the arts. And after success in the United States, Wikia is opening a European sales house based in London. The site currently has 31 million unique users, is getting over 900 million page views, and the average user stays on site for 10 minutes. Those are impressive stats. The site will offer European advertisers the opportunity for in-content branding and custom pages, as well as more familiar aspects such as rich media. Wikia is backed by EA, Sony and Microsoft and has an entertainment bias in the United States. However, with the London Olympics just around the corner, Wikia will be looking to attract some major sports brands. Now, Ray and Brad like to say Adidas, but over here it's Adidas, and that brand seems to be pushing out one new initiative after another. The latest one to hit the news is a series of smartphone apps. The first is called MyCoach, and it aims to help people improve themselves physically and mentally. It's a bit like the Nike Plus system. In addition to the virtual personal trainer, specialist training plans will be developed for a wide range of sports. High-profile stars such as rugby's Johnny Wilkinson and tennis player Andy Murray will headline a global ad campaign spanning TV, print, digital, PR and point of sale. Once again, the campaign has been developed by 180 Amsterdam, but in a surprise move, Adidas has subsequently parted company with that agency. Finally, a tough new bribery act will come into force in the UK next April. It is far-reaching and could affect client-agency relationships at home and abroad. The Act applies to any company doing business in the UK and their overseas operations wherever they may be. So, a US company doing business in the UK would be caught by the Act if its operations in a third country could be construed as a bribe had it occurred in the UK. It would no longer be a defence to say that an action is the normal practice or culturally acceptable in the country where it took place. Roughly speaking, a bribe is anything that a reasonable person in the UK would see as influencing a decision that should be impartial. What isn't clear is where that leaves the corporate hospitality industry, the PR agency organising a media trip abroad for a product launch, or that old favourite, a great agency lunch. From London, this is Jeremy Kent for The Advertising Show.
Thank you, as always, Jeremy Kent here at The Advertising Show with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth. Tom Cohn is attorney at Venable, LLP. Venable.com is the website. What can we tell you about Tom that we haven't already covered? His clients include a wide variety of online and offline advertisers and marketers, and his practice covers federal and state consumer protection and privacy laws and regulations, including newer ones such as the FTC's theft red flags rule. Tom also draws on his experience gained during his 17 years at the FTC, where he worked as a regional director of the Northeast region, as a litigator of the Division of Marketing Practices, and as legal advisor to the director of the Bureau of Consumer Protection. And your mom always wanted you to be a doctor, Tom. And I know you disappointed her, but I'm glad you're in this business from New York. Welcome, Tom. It's great to have you on the Advertising Show.
Oh, great to be here. And then my mom's dad was a lawyer, so she was happy that I became a lawyer.
Okay, that makes sense. Very good. Go ahead, Brad.
Well, I was going to mention that off the air, Tom told us that we've received 2 cease and desist letters and 1 FCC citation just during the first segment. So,
they were talking about Schlesinger's show, not our show, okay?
Oh, is that what it was? Okay, I wanted to make sure we're clear about that. Right. Tom, welcome to the show. Let's talk a little bit about you. Can you tell us a little bit about any significant policy initiatives you've worked on recently that has impacted or affected the advertising industry?
Well, I left the FTC 2 years ago, and I've been at Venable representing all sorts of online and offline advertisers. And there's a lot of stuff going on, especially with the FTC getting more aggressive with their investigations and their enforcement actions. So I'm representing clients and working with my partners at Venable to represent, you know, different sectors like dietary supplement marketers online and direct response marketers who are on TV and radio, and our clients really cover the gamut, you know, large, medium, and small, direct response, national advertisers, up-and-coming internet marketers. So we're just kind of helping them navigate the, you know, regulatory shoals, and we're seeing the FTC and some state AGs, attorney generals as well, getting a lot more aggressive in recent months.
Well, since you brought it up, obviously a lot of benefit from going from the government side, FTC side of the business to the private sector. Insights and inner workings of the FTC is what you obviously bring to your clients' perspective, I suppose. Any other challenges going from government to private sector? Just curious.
Shifting to, you know, representing industry and representing clients, especially in advertising and marketing arena. I do provide them a lot of good insights into how, you know, what regulators are looking at and how they decide, you know, who to look at and who to not look at, and kind of the steps they take in maybe investigating and even putting together a case if they go that far. And my goal is really just to counsel our clients and keep them out of trouble in the first place. And hopefully they'll listen to me, and if they don't, I help them later on.
You know, Tom, this whole issue of marketing as far as pharmaceuticals and supplements and stuff like that seems so convoluted, and you really don't know who to trust because, you know, a year down the road or back up a year, you'll see something on there that is talking about being beneficial. Then a year later, you're seeing lawsuits come out for the effects of this product and or, you know, the lack of a positive response that you might get from that. I mean, what can you believe? And how should advertisers, if they do have something that's a valuable and a viable product, how do they get around this awful shroud of confusion as far as that goes?
It is very confusing, and it's so complicated because there's prescription drugs and there's over-the-counter drugs, and then there's dietary supplements that are not drugs at all but are regulated in a different way. And, you know, it involves the FDA and the FTC and the states. And, you know, the media plays a role, too, because they're always quick to jump on, well, this is good for you, and then the next news story, this is not good for you. And it is very confusing. The best way to that we can advise our clients and, you know, who are in those businesses is you really have to cross your T's and dot your I's and make sure you follow all the latest guidance and advice coming out of the regulators, especially the FDA and the FTC. FDA does prescription drug advertising, and they do all drug labeling, and then the FTC does more non-prescription advertising. That's kind of like the agreement between FDA and FTC. But I agree, it can be very confusing, and there's always different stuff coming out all the time.
You know, Tom, isn't the what we're talking about here, I mean, FTC and FDA, they just basically are supporting the laws that are created or they're substantiating the laws that are created by Congress, and it's the lobbyists, the pharmaceutical lobbyists, that are, you know, out there making sure that Congress allows that kind of advertising by the pharmaceutical companies so that the what they call direct-to-consumer, DTC type advertising, can happen to where the consumer goes out and asks their doctor, can I, you know, be written a prescription for product X? And all this happens, it really just goes back to lobbyists and Congress. Isn't that what we're talking about?
Well, everyone plays a role, and certainly the pharmaceutical lobby is very powerful. Prescription drug advertising is, you know, regulated and closely watched by the FDA, and I think the new regime at the FDA is probably getting more aggressive and sending out more warning letters than ever before. And the FDA is a lot more regulatory than the FTC. The FTC really just has a very small set of laws that they enforce against false advertising and unfair and deceptive practices and how you advertise and market products. You know, you can't make false claims, you can't make unsubstantiated claims, whereas the FDA is a much more regulatory regime with new drug approvals and every step of the process being heavily regulated, not just the advertising of it, of what does get approved. Hmm. So, but certainly at Venable, we've seen FDA become a lot more aggressive in the last year. One thing, and one good example, I noticed over the last 12 months, the FDA and the FTC have gotten together more closely than ever before to send out warning letters on specific areas like H1N1 flu products that are making cure or prevention claims in that area. And they've sent out even joint warning letters with both letterheads, both logos of the FDA and the FTC on it, saying, you know, stop these claims unless you have substantiation for them, and you better give us your substantiation in 48 hours and stuff like that. And so these two agencies are kind of working more closely together than ever to police the whole area.
Let's take this opportunity, Brad, to take a break here, and we'll get back into more conversation with Tom Cohn out of New York. Tom is an attorney, Venable, LLP at Venable.com, our guest here at the Advertising Show, Rachel and Brad Forsyth. Advertising Show being powered by Schipul.com. It's S-C-H-I-P-U-L.com, and a platform, a really killer marketing platform called Tendency. Check it out at Schipul.com. And also stay with us here with more conversation. Right, we'll be back in just a minute.
You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth.
Now, in November, come the longer evenings when folks drop in to play bridge or stop for a snack after the movies. So get the refrigerator stocked with Kraft's famous cheese food, Velveeta, to spread or slice for swell toasted sandwiches.
Attorney Thomas Cohn is with us today at the air at The Advertising Show with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth out of New York. And glad to have you here. I've got a question for you, Tom. We had a client, or a potential client, I should say, maybe call it a lead, who is very interested. This is out of California, and this opened up a whole big can of worms for us as we talked with radio stations in California to the California Association of Broadcasters. And if you say California one more time, you might get this is all about advertising medical marijuana. And we, of course, approach things like that with supreme caution. You know, talking to the CAB, they basically, you know, said this is so new and so nobody has any rules written on it. Nobody has any of, you know, any guidelines. The radio stations themselves, many said, we don't go there. Others say, you know, yes, we might go there. because they're of course interested in the in the cash flow as well. But do you have any background or experience or any commentary on this? At least for California, a new opportunity for advertising dollars. It's weird to us, that's for sure.
Well, yeah, I don't, because I have no clients in that area. But I'm just wondering out loud whether. Oh God, I won't even touch it with a 10-foot pole, because it hasn't the federal law remained unchanged? It's just a political decision by the current administration not to prosecute under the existing federal laws. Remember, the last administration did prosecute.
Yes.
And said the states can't do this. So, you know, states and localities are making it legal for those purposes, and the federal law remains unchanged. So, you know, what's your assurance that it's even lawful? It's kind of up in the air. It's sort of like the federal government's just chosen not to prosecute it currently, but, you know, next administration in 2 years could feel differently. So.
Yes, exactly, and that's why we didn't go there. And I think that's a real good point. There was just so much confusion. Sure, it's a California statewide has their own law, but there again, these in this particular case, radio stations are not regulated by California, but by the FCC, which is a governmental branch. So you know, you just didn't go there. But I was just curious whether. You had, seen or heard or had any opinion on that kind of stuff?
No, not at all. I mean, other than watching a good CNBC report on that industry, which was very enlightening.
Yeah, they also said you could be, what do they say when you're contributing to the crime type thing? You could be, cited for that as well. So, we didn't do that, so I'm glad about that. Brad, you're here. Go right ahead.
Yeah, Tom, give us kind of a lay of the land here and identify which advertisers the FTC is, and as far as that matter, I guess the state's AG's office, what advertisers by category are they focusing their attention on these days?
Well, yeah, I can answer that definitely from the FTC and some of the bigger states' attorney general's perspective. The FTC is definitely focused on health and safety claims. They've brought many cases against bogus cancer cures, allegedly bogus cancer cures, cold and flu products. Certainly, since the recession started, they've attacked the whole so-called poverty vertical, if you will, which is anything ranging from debt and credit-related goods and services to mortgage and foreclosure and work from home and get rich quick, sort of all those offers that are kind of like targeted to people out of work or hurting in the recession. FTC's made a huge priority out of going after allegedly, false, unfair and deceptive practices in that whole area with those types of offers. Kids is always a top priority. Anything involving, goods or products marketed to kids. I mentioned in the break that, national food advertising and kids obesity and marketing to kids is a big priority for, the president's wife as well as for the FTC. And I note that, Kellogg's was put under order by the FTC twice in the last 12 months, one on Frosted Mini-Wheats and one on Rice Krispies with different claims being made. So all of those areas are, I would say, are current top priorities.
Yeah, and I understand that these days ad attacks by competitors certainly has been going on for decades, but recently it's coming under the attention of the NAD. I'm curious, can you tell us who's making claims out there and against whom these days?
The NAD is busier than ever. I would say they're busier than ever these days, and that's the self-regulatory kind of forum that's been set up now for a few decades, and the FTC is a strong supporter of it because it's an alternative to traditional law enforcement. I'm just trying to see what's out there with the NAD. There's just the usual, toilet paper wars and soap scum wars and, competitors in those areas going after each other for their claims. I mean, doesn't that stuff all just kind of like intensify during a recession because you're fighting for your market share that much more strongly during a down economy?
Or automotive advertising for that matter as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, the NAD, I'm just looking at their docket, if you will, and I was just noticing toilet paper and soap scum and, you know, the satellite TV wars and, God, I mean, the list just goes on.
Wow.
Yeah, and a lot of people don't realize that that's, again, as we said, competitors bringing those bringing that to the attention of the NAD about others that may be in that gray area. We've seen a lot of strategy out there where fake content is included in the development of clever campaigns for some well-known legitimate mainstream advertisers. And although the FTC won't act on this in particular, I understand that they're making that they're in the process of taking a different stance on online fake news and reviews intended to drive traffic to one site. Bring us up to date on this, if you would, Tom.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I mean, for many, many years now, there's always going to be clever campaigns involving, you know, some satire or some puffery or something involving something that turns out not to be true, and it's just a joke, and it's like, you know, designed to, you know, foment controversy and interest. And I would say when large, legitimate, mainstream advertisers do that, maybe there's an NAD claim from a competitor. But, you know, the traditional regulators like the FTC aren't going to go after stuff like that. What they are starting more recently to look into, though, is in the online space where there's fake blogs and fake review sites and fake news articles masquerading as like a TV station or a newspaper that really doesn't exist. And it's all kind of a way to drive traffic to certain advertisers, certain online merchants. And we see it with a lot of sort of non-branded products. And I mentioned some areas that are high scrutiny, like get-rich-quick offers and maybe some dietary supplements that aren't, you know, don't have name brands or they don't have intellectual property protection. The names change often. And we've seen a lot of this in the last 2 years, flogs, which is a term for a fake web blog, a fake blog. And affiliate marketers who are performance marketers, they publish content for the sole purpose of driving the consumer traffic to particular merchants. A lot of affiliate marketers have used, you know, these tactics, fake blogs, fake reviews, and fake news sites. And I think the regulators are finally paying attention, and they're going to start looking into it more closely.
Good for them. Attorney Thomas Cohn is our guest here at the Advertising Show. Venable is the place. Venable LLP, Venable.com is the website with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth here on the Advertising Show. Totally in compliance today. We have an attorney on the show. We have to. Okay? We'll be back in just a minute with more. Attorney Tom Cohn on the Advertising Show today with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. Venable LLP, Venable.com is the website. Before we continue our interview, I'd like you please to say for the record, void where prohibited. Please do that. I'm joking. By the way, do you get telemarketing calls? And if you do get them, what do you do?
Myself?
Yeah, yourself.
Well, I get very few because I'm all my numbers are registered on the National Do Not Call Registry.
Okay.
Go on donotcall.gov and register your number.
Well, say someone gets through. I mean, wouldn't it be a blast and a hoot to say you're talking with the FTC and something like that?
Well, I as of 2 years ago, I can't say that anymore.
Okay, good for you.
I'm with Venable now, but when I was at the FTC, it's I could say that.
That would certainly scare him. Go ahead, Brad.
Yeah, I know, Tom, you attended the February 2010 Electronic Retailers Association Midwinter Conference entitled the Great Ideas Summit. I know you were also a key part of a industry experts panel discussion, and part of that discussion was on online affiliate marketing. I want to take advantage of that discussion that took place several months ago. What's being done to protect consumers today, and what kind of predators are you seeing out there when it comes to online affiliate marketing?
Well, yeah, like I said before the break, you know, affiliate marketing, you know, for those who aren't, you know, don't understand it's really a performance-based model where, you know, 20th century advertising, it's like, you know, throw it up and see what sticks, and God knows if you could ever measure increased sales as a result of advertising. But with the performance model of these affiliate marketers, they're being paid on a very quantifiable basis. If they drive traffic to a particular seller online through, you know, whatever tactic they're using, like a blog or a review site or a banner ad or whatever, you know, that consumer goes then gets driven to that product site. She buys, and there's a pixel that fires, and the merchant pays the affiliate marketer based on that consumer who converted. And there's intermediaries called online ad networks, where, you know, the advertiser would pay the network, who in turn pays the affiliate. But what the problem that's arisen in the past couple of years, especially, is a lot of fake, you know, just false and unsubstantiated stuff being published by affiliate marketers. You know, a fake blog about a woman's, you know, weight loss story from using one or two products, and it's all made up out of whole cloth and things like that. So that's there's a lot of that out there, and I think the state and federal regulators are going to start looking more closely at those tactics by affiliate marketers and everyone's role in that system, be it the affiliates or the online ad networks or the, you know, the sellers themselves.
Yeah. You know, green marketing is something that we've been talking about here at the Advertising Show for several years. It seemed like once that took off, a lot of companies jumped on that bandwagon, some legitimate, others not so legitimate, and just wanting to make claims of being a green marketer and knowing that all the benefits that would come with such claims. Can you talk a little bit, Tom, about the green claims that are coming under scrutiny and related settlements these days?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, this has been going on for at least 20 years now. And way back in '92, the FTC issued what it calls the Green Guides, which were, you know, to guide industry on making specific green claims like biodegradable, compostable, recyclable, stuff like that. And they updated those guides in '96 and in '98, and now they're in the process of updating them once again. And sometime in the next few months, actually, they're going to be issuing the final revised guides on these green claims. One good example of a recent set of cases, last week, the FTC announced some complaints and settlements with marketers of bamboo-based textiles that were actually, you know, made of rayon. They weren't antimicrobial. They weren't necessarily made in an environmentally friendly manner, as, you know, the sellers allegedly were claiming. So the FTC brought a number of cases there and announced some settlements last week where the sellers agreed to stop making those claims, abide by the law, and that's one good example. Just came out last week.
You know, I'm going to get your thoughts on this. I was reading an article the other day, totally off the subject, and you know nothing that we were going to talk about this, but I'm sure you have an opinion. I understand the FTC is wanting to reinvent journalism, or perhaps save traditional journalism from its potential demise, in a just released staff discussion draft of potential policy recommendations. The FTC staff declares defeat in the search for a new business model. So some think that it may explore government intervention, such as expanding copyright law or restricting the doctrine of fair comment, granting antitrust exemptions, giving news organizations tax exemptions, and other possibilities. Few thoughts came to mind as I was reading this, Tom. Should the FTC really, or for that matter, any government agency, really be involved in our free press system, saving it or reinventing it or whatever?
Boy, I mean, that's a hot button issue. I've only been, you know, just very tangentially following that that process that the FTC underwent. I do understand they were looking at it from more of an antitrust perspective than a consumer or consumer protection perspective, and antitrust meaning competition laws and consolidation in that industry. And I don't really have any comment about that. You're saying the FTC did issue something in the last?
Yeah, they had. Just it was basically a, you know, a potential. It was a staff discussion draft, in effect, that put forth a document saying, you know, we couldn't come up with a new business model for traditional media, but here are some things that we might explore. And I don't know whether it's First Amendment or any other, you know, legitimate business that has a tradition, such as traditional media. I always thought it was about letting the marketplace dictate those who succeed and those who don't. But again, I don't mean to catch you flat-footed on that. Let me shift gears real quickly as we wrap up the interview today and get
in about a minute, if you can, please.
Yeah, and get you to weigh in on this. A testimonial or a customer review has certainly been a strategy that's long been used to gain trust of the skeptical consumer. The internet has made it possible for us to share our opinions on a much greater scale, and even anonymously, I guess, for that matter, if you so choose to. The downside, of course, is that it couldn't be abused and misused. I'm curious about your thoughts on what's going on from enforcement trends when it comes to, you know, policing this. I know you've said before that, you know, they're now looking at it. Leading up to this, has it been, you know, buyer beware and just kind of, you know, fend for yourself out there, and you know, why now? Why are they taking a look at it now? Is it just a volume issue?
Well, actually, it goes back like 30 years. Actually, the FTC had another set of guides called the Endorsement and Testimonial Guides that were issued 30 years ago, and they never got around to updating or revising those endorsement guides until a couple years ago, and they went through a process. They issued their final revised guides last October, and the highlight in their revised endorsement guides was that they sort of took away what we commonly call the safe harbor, where you could portray atypical results in an endorsement or testimonial as long as you had a proper disclaimer like results may vary. They basically took away that safe harbor, and they said, no, you're not going to be able to have that anymore, and if you're portraying results that, you know, create where the net impression is that that's the typical result, then you're going to actually have to disclose, you know, what the typical results are, and you got to have substantiation for that. So it's really been many years in the making, and like I said, the guides were 30 years old, and they finally revised them last year. I think what the FTC is going to do, like probably in the next several months, is they'll start bringing cases or announcing settlements, sort of applying the new revised guides, and they may bring some cases against players out there who just ignore that taking away of that safe harbor and are still trying to portray some outrageous atypical result with a disclaimer. Results may vary. They may do a case like that.
Tom, we will keep creating the great ads, and this will keep you in business, okay, for a long time here. Tom, it's been a great pleasure having you here at the Advertising Show. Venable.com is the website. We certainly enjoyed it, but thanks for being here.
Thank you.
On the Advertising Show, Ray Schillen, Brad Forsyth. You want more? Okay, you got more. Stick around. We'll be back in just a minute. Thanks again to Thomas Cohn, attorney at Venable LLP, here with Ray Schillens and Brad Forsyth on the Advertising Show. Next week, it is a brand new month here. This is another anniversary coming up here in a couple of weeks for us here at the Ad Show. The 13th of September 2001 was the first start date. So, Rob Scalia of North American CEO of the Brand Union is our guest next week here at the Advertising Show, and of course, that'll be a great interview as well. I mean, they're all great, right? Also want to say thanks to Jeremy Kent for his weekly contributions here at the Ad Show. What are you holding there? What is that?
Well, I was going to mention this, but before I do it, I wanted to also say Thomas Cohen was a great guest, and it's the longest I've ever spoken to a lawyer and not received a bill. So just thank you.
Yet.
Thank you,
yet.
Thomas.
Yet, yet. Yeah, that's coming.
This I thought was weird, Ray. You know, a lot of people in business and radio in particular have always said we don't want the government involved in our business. We want a free marketplace. You hear that in all various industries. Well, music labels and radio broadcasters want Congress to mandate FM radio receivers to be built into mobile phones and other portable devices, according to the Consumer Electronics Association. However, they mm-hmm. see the request as a height of absurdity, according to the Consumer Electronics Association, from buggy-whipped industries is what they're calling it. That was reported by the Consumer Electronics Association, not on their behalf. So isn't it strange that, you know, the broadcasters are most of the time saying we want the government to bug out of our business, but in this case, music labels and radio broadcasters want Congress
no, they want
to mandate
that, yeah.
FM radio receivers to be built into mobile phones. Would you want an FM receiver in your mobile phone? I don't think I would.
Well, no, and it really isn't necessary. I mean, if you want if you want to listen, what's the matter with going online? You know, I mean,
I think they're trying to get further distribution in new media that they feel like they're being left out of and maybe left in the dust being legacy media. I don't know.
That's a very interesting point that you bring up, and I don't know that I can see where they're going with that. And that, to me, just opens up, speaking of Internet radio, a whole new, you know, Pandora's box of problems there for folks. I don't know. Radio needs to... radio needs to be radio. And, you know, they say, in 5 years it'll be 500,000 cars that will have Internet radios because Wi-Fi's... So predominant in so many cities now. So, and that'll have the bugs to get worked out too as well. Excuse me. But I don't know. I don't see a necessity and or a reason or anything really good coming out of that, and probably nothing will. Right.
Well, I would think, and you know, if as you say, the automobiles will have internet radio capability or connectivity, if I'm the folks at, what's the word I'm looking for?
Like pay for play type stuff or something like
that.
Well,
yeah, but in particular, Sirius Satellite Radio, that's what
sure.
I'm trying to think.
Right.
If I'm Sirius Satellite Radio, I'm concerned, you know, because that will displace me if the internet is capable of connecting in. So, I don't know.
Not to mention that our government has many more important things to worry about.
Yeah, they should.
So stay out of the way and let things happen. Anyway, thanks to Thomas once again, and look forward to seeing you next week here at the Advertising Show, which is being brought to you, by the way, by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com for those folks. And, of course, tune in anytime to the Advertising Show. You can do that even on your mobile device. The Advertising Show is a copyrighted Big Radio Midgets production.
Under pressure? Get creative concepts fast. Run a global pitch on openad.net and gain access to a global brain trust of nearly 11,000 advertising and marketing creators from 125 countries. Simply take 15 minutes to fill out our online brief form and we'll take care of the rest. From world-class agencies to the best independents to the brightest freelancers, openad.net global creatives can deliver creative concepts direct to your desktop in a matter of days. Why not save time, energy, and money by quickly sourcing concepts from the world's brightest creative minds? Visit openad.net and see how we're revolutionizing the way ideas are created and traded. It's simple, it's fast, and it's global. Openad.net, the smarter way to create your advertising from the freshest creative minds on the planet. Visit openad.net today to find out more.